WBUR Podcasts, Boston.
I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and you're listening to The Common. April is Earth Month, which is a time to reflect on the one planet we have, and for a lot of us, that brings up climate change and how it's affecting our communities. So, all month long, we're featuring weekly conversations with some of the people in Greater Boston working to build our region's resilience in the face of a changing climate. Today's guest is James Comiskey, an activist with Extinction Rebellion, a global environmental movement that aims to use nonviolent civil disobedience to compel government action on climate change. He's also a co-leader of Boston's Rainbow Rebellion, which is an offshoot of the group focused on the intersection of climate and LGBTQ issues. James, thank you so much for coming through to The Common.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
So, James, let's start with the last part of your introduction, you being co-lead for Rainbow Rebellion. Tell us why climate change is an LGBTQ issue.
It's an LGBTQ issue because the impacts of climate change that we're going to see, we're already seeing, and that we will see in the future, will have an adverse effect on the queer community. The reasons for that are the queer community sees higher rates of homelessness, poverty, food insecurity. So when climate change is going to have adverse weather effects, the queer community will face the worst effects of that because they're already an at-risk community.
Mm-hmm.
A quote that is said often is, we're all going to be in the same storm, but not in the same boat.
Yeah.
And so there are many communities of people that are not going to be affected the same by climate change. Mm-hmm. And we need those voices to be in the conversation of the solutions that we're going to be moving towards, because we have to make sure that we're bringing everybody along with us.
So give me some examples of adverse effects.
Right. So let's talk about first sea level rise.
Yep.
Some people may not know that cities and coastal towns are up to 3 times more LGBTQ dense than the rest of the country, meaning places like Boston, San Francisco, Seattle. A lot of these coastal cities are where queer people have gone because cities tend to be more progressive and accepting of the queer community. And so there's more queer people centered in those areas where sea level rise is going to affect the hardest.
I do want to zoom out for a second and talk about your work, both in Extinction Rebellion and Rainbow Rebellion. Y'all do these big public demonstrations, blocking traffic, die-ins. Talk to me about the strategy behind this. Why use these tactics?
So Extinction Rebellion uses nonviolent civil disobedience, and those first two words are extremely important.
Mm-hmm.
Not only is it the moral high ground, right, in a campaign where we're trying to preserve life on Earth, but it also is the effective way. And there have been historians that have studied this. One particular is Erica Chenoweth. She studied hundreds of political demonstrations throughout history and proved that the ones that took nonviolent tactics were more effective in seeing their demands met than violent ones. So that's just a principle of Extinction Rebellion. We do use more flashy and sometimes controversial protest tactics, but always nonviolent.
Mm-hmm.
The reason why we take this route is because we think that the system is designed to fail to combat climate change. There have been plenty of governmental and non-governmental organizations that have done incredible work trying to make petitions, to call your senators, to lobby for bills, and look where we are, right? We're not in a good place in terms of how we're handling this climate crisis.
Mm-hmm.
The public urgency and understanding of the reality of the crisis is still pretty low. What protest work does is puts it center stage. And that's what's going to help when we push for stronger climate action towards the government, that there's support behind it, that the people know why we're doing it.
Now, you alluded to this already, but can you tell us more about how Extinction and Rainbow Rebellion's protest methods call back to past movements like the Civil Rights Movement, the Gay Liberation Movement, and what can today's climate activists learn from those?
Mm. So for queer history of protest, there's actually a lot more than people might think. Things like die-ins. Die-ins were a tactic that were taken up by a group called ACT UP, which was an activist group in the late 80s, early 90s that went to religious institutions, the FDA, people that were lobbying against or dragging the feet on proper AIDS and HIV medication for queer people. Mm-hmm. And they would do a die-in at those pillars of power to make the statement of, if we continue to see inaction, this is what we're going to get. People are going to die. And so Extinction Rebellion has done a number of different die-ins. Rachel Carson, who was a marine biologist, she wrote Silent Spring in the early 60s, basically warning against the increased use of pesticides. She was a lesbian woman who is credited with basically starting the modern environmental global movement. What gets to people's emotions, which is really where people start to see change, you can't just show up with your cardboard sign somewhere. You have to speak to people. And especially if you want to get media attention, the protest tactic has to be a little bit flashier. It has to have aspects of gravity or humor or joy. That's all things that I think the queer community embodies so well and has a lot of perspective to bring.
James, we're going to take a quick break here. But when we get back, I guess I want to talk a little bit more about the landscape of this fight to raise awareness about climate change and just what you think needs to happen moving forward. So we're going to talk about that. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back with activists with Extinction Rebellion and co-leader of Boston's Rainbow Rebellion, James Comiskey. James, I want to ask you about the climate activism landscape right now here in Greater Boston and just how the LGBTQ community fits into it. Do you feel like there's enough representation from queer folks in this conversation around climate that we're having?
It's a great question. I think that activist spaces, at least, you know, I primarily work in climate activist spaces, are more dominantly queer than the demographic around it. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a couple of reasons for that. I think that in order to engage in activism, you first have to have a notion that something's wrong in society. You're not going to engage in activism if you think things are pretty much going okay. And I think queer people, by very nature, have to grow up and question that. And so I think they're just a few steps closer to engaging in activism because they've already questioned this idea of society doesn't function the way that in a way that I fit in or in a way that I think should function. In activism, you have to be willing to face criticism. And I think queer people have already faced criticism in their lives before they come out, after they come out. And so I think we see more queer representation in activism. Climate activism in Boston, the reason why my friend Michael and I started Rainbow Rebellion is because we felt like queerness wasn't being highlighted as a sort of intersectionality focus as much as it could be, and that our queer friends that, you know, in our networks weren't engaging in the same way that we are. And so we were trying to inspire them to sort of join us and get next to us.
Where does the younger generation fit into your work?
Well, I think we need young voices because this crisis is going to affect them the most. And so we need to make sure, again, that the solutions and the conversations are including young people. You know, in my opinion, the U.S. has sort of lost its touch with its rebellious roots a little bit. And so I'd love to see more engagement from young people. Mm-hmm. A lot of our protests involve aspects where people get arrested. And that typically is a demographic where retirees can lend a helping hand because they don't have jobs at risk. They don't have records that are going to get potentially, you know, tarnished by this. So I think in some ways, Extinction Rebellion can scare some younger people away because they don't want to be associated with a group who's getting arrested in the streets. The reality of it is, for every person that you see arrested in the streets, there's like six people doing behind the scenes work with music, with art, with planning, with social media to help them out, where you don't need to put yourself at risk if you're not comfortable doing that.
So everybody has a role.
Exactly.
Everybody has a role, a part to play.
And for young people, helping in the, I think Extinction Rebellion is pretty good at getting traditional media and not as good in the social media department.
Right.
And that's where we need their help.
Need that TikTok brigade.
Exactly, yeah. Takes me 5 hours to make a TikTok. It's embarrassing.
Listen, man, who are you telling? Who are you telling? Activism is a lot of work. And of course, it can be very hard, very challenging. You know, you're putting yourself on the line in a lot of ways. What I'm getting from you is, even with all of that, even with all of the pressuring and the lobbying and the calling and all this work you're doing to try to convince elected officials and the people in power to prepare us for climate change or to slow it, prepare us, whatever it might be, not enough is happening, right? Do you ever get discouraged? And if so, you know, how do you bring yourself back?
For sure, I get discouraged. When I found Extinction Rebellion, it was like this world of hope and people who thought like me and considered this urgent enough to put themselves out there for and go against societal grain. And man, that was so inspiring to me and still is. But I ride the roller coaster just like everyone else, especially as you lead up to sort of planning a protest. You get this excitement. You get this, okay, we're going to do this. We're going to target this pillar of power and we're going to take a stand and make a message. And then you get media attention and social media attention. And you think, oh my gosh, you did it. And then 2 days later, you realize, okay, we were, you know, we put this drop in the ocean of this, of the climate conversation. And you have this come down period where it's a little bit of a depression of like, oh, right, we didn't solve climate change with that action. And so it's a little bit of this roller coaster feeling. I do have a lot of hope. I can't be around fellow activists and not feel hopeful. But I'm not unaware that we're facing a Goliath issue. And we're just a lot of different Davids trying to fight that fight.
A Goliath issue of many Goliath issues
mm-hmm,
right now.
Exactly.
Well, James, thank you for coming through and talking to us. My last question before we go, it's Earth Month.
Mm-hmm.
What suggestions do you have for people who want to get out there and reflect on our planet? Where is somewhere they can go, an activity they can do?
Mm. So there are Earth Day events happening around Boston. Extinction Rebellion has one on Earth Day. You can check it out at xrboston.org. I would say, to be honest, the number one thing would be just go to a welcome call for any act. It doesn't need to be Extinction Rebellion. It can be Climate Defiance. It can be 350. But I really think that people, the first step they should take is engaging in activism. So that's what I would say. Find an Earth Day activity with an activist organization and then keep the conversation after that.
Well, James, thank you so much for coming through to The Common.
Thank you. Been a pleasure.
That's activist with Extinction Rebellion and co-leader of Boston's Rainbow Rebellion, James Comiskey. And that's our show for today. Thank you so much for listening to The Common. Let us know what some of your Earth Month plans are. Hit us up on Instagram at WBURTheCommon or send us an email at thecommon@wbur.org. I'm Darryl C. Murphy, and I will talk to you tomorrow.